Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. Today with me is Daniel McAdams. Daniel, good to see you.
Good morning, Dr. Paul.
Good. Yesterday, there was some bombing with possibly gas exposure in Syria, and things have changed. It reminds me sort of weather reports. Well, if you don't like the weather, just wait an hour. You know, you'll get different weather. Well, that's sort of what happens in the Middle East sometimes, that just wait. It'll change.
Yeah.
And actually, you know, before this episode of possible gas exposure and who did what, things were going along reasonably well for the conditions. You know, Trump says let the Syrians decide who should run their country, and peace talks were breaking out, and Al-Qaeda and ISIS were on the run, on maybe defeated. So it was like, you know, in spite of their problems with this foreign policy, it looked like there was some benefit, but it looks like maybe somebody didn't like that, so there had to be an episode. And the blame now is that we can't let that happen because it looks like it might benefit Assad. So Assad, they claim, now went and released gas to kill a bunch of people. But, Daniel, we might not have much of a job here today because I looked at the New York Times to find out, to get the explanation, and they said, worst chemical attack in years in Syria. U.S. blames Assad. So it's all over and done with. But not quite so easy, is it? What happened 4 years ago in 2013? You know, this whole thing about crossing the red line, and ever since then, the neocons have been yelling and screaming. Even part of the administration is still yelling and screaming about Assad using poison gases on his people 4 years ago. Not quite true.
Yeah, it was never proven, in fact. And the UN official Carlo Del Ponte said that attack was most likely done by the rebels based on the evidence. But here you have Nikki Haley, U.S. ambassador to the UN, almost as we speak, literally, at the UN Security Council, saying, quote, "We know Assad has used chemical weapons before." It's not true. It has never been proven that he has. He may have. We do know that the rebels have used them. That has been proven.
And who would benefit? It makes no sense, even if you were totally separate from this and take no sides of this, and you were just an analyst. It doesn't make any sense for Assad in these conditions to all of a sudden use poison gases. I think it's zero chance that he would have done this, deliberately, and he's doing this now. But we could also go to a famous senator who's an expert on foreign policy, and we could go ask John McCain to explain it, and he found somebody to blame. And I don't know what he has it in for the president. We criticize our president once in a while, and we try to be, you know, balanced and criticize the things we think he's doing that we don't like. But McCain says, blame Trump. It's all Trump's fault because he hasn't been aggressive enough. He's backing off. He wants to have negotiations when you have to get rid of Assad. So he's back in prior to 2011 when the neocons, which are in cahoots with a few allies like Saudi Arabia and Israel, the Sunnis, and the Iranians, you know, they're all, in cahoots together. So therefore, they have to be destroyed.
Yeah, and it's, the fact is, as you point out, we're on the eve of peace talks, literally on the eve of peace talks. Assad has the upper hand in these talks. He's almost, essentially, with his Russian and Iranian allies, wiped Al-Qaeda and ISIS out of the country. So on the verge of this great victory that they've suffered for all these years, he decides, I think I'm going to go out and kill some people with gas, you know. And if he just wanted to kill people, there are a heck of a lot better ways of doing it than using gas, which just guarantees that the entire world community, including your allies, are going to turn against you. As you say, he would have to be the most insane leader probably in the history of the world, a Caligula or something.
Well, you know, the collusion of several groups, and we might throw pro-oil people in and pro-military industrial people that is in this effort to continue wars going on. But I think it's the same group of people we dealt with when we were trying to prevent, the remaking of the Middle East under Bush and his marching in to have regime change in Afghanistan and Iraq, and look at the results there. But they never learned from this. So they just shift gears, go to Libya. If it doesn't work, let's go over now. And maybe they consider they've had a tremendous success in Ukraine or something. But now it's Syria, and they're into it, but they're all coming together. And when you look up at what they do, is they do have to get some type of public support for the war. Although they're behind the scenes, the neocons and the deep state, they're making the plans, they rule the day, but they still know that they have to use their propaganda machine to get the people behind them. And I think that is what's going on. They did that in Iraq successfully because people believed Saddam Hussein was a monster, and they sort of forgot about it. The people allow the Congress to keep spending all this money, to remake the Middle East. Keeps getting worse, but a lot of people, hopefully we can make inroads, in the public perceptions of this, that this makes no sense whatsoever to just blindly support this policy. So the interesting thing, of course, and it's very important, is how's Trump going to handle this? You know, the first statement I heard, Assad's a bum, we got to go after him. He was really, really tough. And the next time, it wasn't so tough. So it almost he almost had two answers. It wasn't, no, I don't think it was him. We don't need to escalate. We need to find out more what's going on. It doesn't make any sense that he's done that. So he's sort of in between on this. And it's important. Now, if you go to Haley, and other military people that are in the administration, they're gung-ho sometimes to support the neoconservatives. But it's the neoconservatives who are benefiting tremendously from this, because it's derailed the progress that has already been made moving toward a more peaceful settlement in Syria.
Yeah, and the loss of the rebels. But, I think it's the reaction is epitomized by Boris Johnson, who's the UK foreign minister. Here's what he said. All evidence points to the Assad regime. In the next sentence, he called for a thorough and international investigation. Well, how do you have all the evidence pointing to someone if you haven't had the investigation yet? And I think it's interesting that the initial stories about this attack came from two sources. One of them is an NGO based in the UK that's not even in Syria, and the other is a US-funded group called the White Helmets, very controversial group because they work very closely with al-Nusra Front in Syria. Both of these groups are paid for by the US and UK government, so you, at the very least, would have to be suspicious about these reports. And plus, I've seen pictures that the White Helmets have put up of them handling these people supposedly hit with sarin gas, but they didn't have any protection. And everything I've read about sarin is that it's absorbed through your skin.
Remember the prop they used leading up to the Iraq war of taking babies out of incubators? Yeah. It was all stage, a paid PR firm in the United States using people in the United States to claim that as a story. But McCain actually made fun of the notion when Trump came out with a reasonable statement, let the Syrians decide about this. It's just this whole thing. He says, how can they do it? And he argues that what right do they have to decide their own country? But that would be the argument for why should we be there, even at all? Why wouldn't we let the Libyans and the Syrians and the Iraqis and the Afghans, let them all decide, but that option's not usually on the table. There's another option that they throw out there.
And what a hypocrite he is, because here's the same guy who's screaming about the Russians interfered in our elections. And then he says, no one else is allowed to decide their own.
Right.
But here's another good example, Adam Kinzinger, Republican of Illinois. And this shows that the mentality of many people in Congress. And so people think that these people are statesmen and they're so well-versed. This is what he said. I think there needs to be punishing strikes against the Syrian regime as a result of this. You could hit the command and control centers, cutting Assad off from his military forces. But what he's calling for is literally World War III. And even if it wasn't, even if the Russians stood back and let us do this to bomb and kill the Assad regime, how many thousands and thousands of people would be killed if the U.S. started bombing Damascus over this tragic figure of apparently around 100 people killed in this attack? You're going to have tens of thousands killed in Damascus. This is so irresponsible.
And it's always the children that they show it, and then they say that it's Assad. It has nothing to do with our policy. But, the blatant episode leading up or at the time the Iraq war was going on, I remember Albright was being questioned, that it was a report out that 500,000 women, children died from our bombing over a 10-year period. We kept bombing and bombing and bombing and destroying infrastructure and all that. And she didn't deny it. She says, well, if that's the cost, it is, we have to have it. So this idea that they can throw show his child and say that child's been gassed, and it was Assad's fault, and therefore we have to bomb everybody and kill a lot more people, then who knows what will happen. See, what they're betting on is those who are shouting that maybe they can just stop the peace talks, but they don't believe our policies will lead to a hot war with Russia. I don't happen to believe it will either, but do you think there's a guarantee that something like that couldn't happen? You know, and even if it doesn't, just destroying what's left of Syria by outside forces, you know, by individuals who were not invited into Syria. You know, there's a few people who are there that have been invited and a few that have not been. And we happen to be on the side of the people who have not been invited in to help bring the peace to Syria.
And, you know, if Kinzinger and people like him get their way, Syria will be ruled by, best case scenario, ISIS or Al-Qaeda, or it'll turn into another Libya. But, you know, people would say, if watching the show right now, they'd say, you guys are just a couple of apologists for Assad. We're not, as you know. The fact is, as you pointed out earlier, we don't believe the lies. And we believe now that we're being told lies like we were in Libya, like we were in Iraq. It has nothing to do with whether we like or dislike Assad or think he's a good guy or a bad guy. It has to do with being lied to.
And this is the reason that, you know, Russia came up with the explanation. They didn't say that they weren't dropping bombs because they're trying to, you know, win the war for Assad. Everybody knows that. But what they're saying is that that they accidentally or they hit a target which had weaponry in it and they had gas in there and that released the gas. That's what the Russians said. For some reason, I don't even think that is the case, even though I have no idea. But if you're looking for a reasonable explanation of it, there's somebody has been involved. If it turns out there's gas, like you say, they don't even know it if there's gas. But if there was gas involved, then it was, you know, probably inspired by some of our sinister forces, because we're always involved. I mean, did we have a change of administrations in Ukraine without NATO and the United States and CIA and special forces? No, that's how it happens. So why would this, which is a significant event, maybe it'll blow over and people will forget about it and say, oh yeah, that's another episode. It might not blow over again, but it just looks like it's not an accidental event, and it looks like it makes no sense that that Assad is ready to commit suicide, you know.
And, literally.
Because they could, you know, United States and the British and other, we have a lot of warplanes. We could just destroy the rest of the country. And some of these people act like they would, you know.
And, you know, if he was, again, if he was keen on just killing people, then why is Aleppo, now that the terrorists are out, why is it rebuilding? You know, you see pictures of it rebuilding. Why isn't he in there killing people if that's just what he likes to do? That doesn't make...
It makes no sense whatsoever, but I think it's a reflection of a consequence of our foreign policy, and we shouldn't be surprised. It's a little different this time, but, you know, in time, you know, in a couple weeks or maybe a month or so, or ultimately, it'll be always used for propaganda, although we did get to as close to the truth as conceivable about Assad not using gas 4 years ago. It's still a propaganda tool. Even half of the Trump administration still uses that against Trump. So it's real hard to cancel out these images, and they're still going to say that. So how would you put all this together, and what do you think might happen?
Well, I think you're right. The propaganda value is so strong. Even if a couple weeks down the road, it doesn't look so much like he did it, it's already established. The one final word that I would, you know, I just, Nikki Haley, I think, is one of the worst people in the administration. Here is just a couple of days after a terrorist attack in Russia, in St. Petersburg. And she was at the UN Security Council today saying, how many more children have to die before Russia cares? you know, just after they're victims of this attack. So
it's always awful, always about the children. Yeah so awful. Well, I'll tell you what, if we really cared, we wouldn't even be in that country, I'll tell you that. I think Trump had it absolutely right. Let the Syrians decide what to do about their government. The Syrian people ought to make the decision. And that's a term that's been used generously by a lot of our leaders. Certainly Woodrow Wilson preached self-determination, but look at the consequence of that mess. And that's why I think that we have to look at a bigger picture than just strategy. You know, whether we bomb here tomorrow, the next day, or we move troops here, do we support this group? It's like interventionism in economic policy. You can't plan the economy through monetary manipulation, and you can't plan to run the world and control the world and bring all the factions together by manipulating particular events. You have to decide what you stand for, preach the lessons at home, set good examples, and don't try to force your views on other people. Don't try to use it, guns and bombs and missiles, and say you do it our way or not. So right now, the president's going to be meeting with the president of China, and I don't think that it should be intimidation. I think it should be a frank discussion. But this idea, do it my way or else, it just won't work. I just don't know why we should give up on the principle of negotiation and diplomacy. If we give up on that, then we're going to have the neoconservatives epitomized by Bill Kristol and Cheney and McCain and Lindsey Graham, the other ones who will be running it. And in many ways, they have a lot of influence. I mean, they're closer to the insiders. They're closer to the deep state, and their message keeps getting out. And this may well be an example of what they can do to reverse any attempt to come up with a peaceful solution. That is why the message of non-interventionism, mind our own business, have a strong national defense, protect liberty here at home, that is the policy that must be used if we are determined to promote the cause of peace and prosperity. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.